Welcome one and all to another day here at The Damage Report, a John Solo show. Deal with it. We're going to go with it, and I think that we're going to have a lot of fun because the rundown is actually jam-packed with insanity. We have people being humiliated. We have people willingly humiliating themselves. We've got updates on Joe Biden apparently hearing the criticism of his policy vis-a-vis Gaza and maybe responding substantively for the first time, so that will be fun. We've got fake Christians and we've got jokes about assassination. So lots of fun stuff, definitely buckle up for all that. That's just the first hour. In the aftermath, we're gonna be talking about NFTs and Barron Trump taking another step towards potentially becoming president someday. So lots of fun stuff to look forward to, not only for the next 90 minutes of our show, but I don't know, the next few decades of American politics, I suppose. So we're gonna jump into all of that in just a minute, but I do wanna give you our little daily update on our first ever Dragonathon. If you're just hearing about this for the first time, we're doing a month long drive to try to encourage as much gifting of memberships as possible on YouTube and subscription gifting on Twitch. And there has been a lot of it. We had an overall goal of reaching 500 gifted memberships over the course of the month. And if we hit that goal, I would have my hair professionally dyed purple, which for some reason you people want. And we blew past that after like a week. So we're now at 683 total gifted memberships, which is just awesome. But then in addition to the community goal, we also have a leaderboard to recognize individual achievements in being a good ambassador for the show. And if you end up in one of the top five positions in that, you can get to choose from a variety of different individual rewards, including an insane NFT of me in the style of the Trump trading cards, signed t-shirts, choosing a garbage person for us to present, and a number of other things. And I want to give you an update on where that leaderboard stands. At number one, Gabby Mess still dominating lead at 80 gifted memberships. We have a tie at second place of 50 for Voxella and Sam Hurley. Lady FNT is at 40. We have a tie at fourth place. This is 30 gifted memberships with Alembican, Moondragon, and Jen Welch. Tied for fifth place with 25, we have Kide, Kimmy Corey Jr., Joe Gutierrez. And then on the 6 through 10 spot, we have Swedane Dragon at 21 gifted memberships. Jill Jedden and Chris Smith at 20, Ruby Dooby Doo Dragon and then Bronco at 15. And then a big tie for that final spot. This is at 10 gifted memberships, LaShawn Lewis, T Underhill, BH, Acid Rain, David Collum, and James Thompson. I see some gifting already going on in it, so thank you. Much appreciated for all of you for doing that. We'll have further updates as we go. And we want to start to preview some of what the actual rewards will be in practice. So definitely look forward to that. But with all that said, we're gonna jump into the news. Hit the like button if you haven't already. And let's start talking about this.
Stormy claims that she blacked out in this tryst with Trump, but she wasn't on any drugs or alcohol. You blacked out without drugs or alcohol. Some of us call that sleeping. Now, it could be that you really blacked out after having sex with Trump, which is a compliment. Truly, he screwed the brains out of her.
Oh God!
That makes him a sex god.
Okay, so for quite a while, they were satisfied on the right to talk about him as if he was their god emperor. Now he's a literal sex god. And so this is what Greg Gutfeld is. This is what right-wing comedy is. Playing defense for a billionaire former president who had a roughly non-consensual sexual experience that was described in traumatic detail by the woman who was subjected to his unwanted advances. And rather than having an issue with that and how this seems to blow up the whole idea that they're, you know, these old school conservatives that care about these values, he's defending a guy who did something sort of on the line of a sexual assault, and he elevates it to he's a sex god. So Greg Gutfeld is now trying to lead his audience in fantasizing about what an amazing experience it must be to have Donald Trump bearing down on you sexually. Okay, it doesn't seem funny to me. I'm not a professional comedian. I don't really think he is either, but that's, you know, that's his title. Okay, you can do that. Let's just bear in mind, the jokes aside, because he's not doing this in a stand-up routine. He's doing this in a comedy-themed Fox News show. It's a political thing. It is designed to achieve political goals. And the goal here is, do not pay attention to Stormy Daniels when she says that she was traumatized by this experience. She's not claiming that it was a sexual assault, by the way, but she is describing the experience she had, which was one where she didn't want to have this sexual experience. And he goes out and says, that's just because it was so good. Now he knows, Greg Gutfeld knows how it was described. It was described as incredibly brief, not satisfying for her, although he clearly liked it. She described in graphic and humiliating detail the physical parameters of his body. Now, if he was an actual comedian, there are things that you can make fun of in that. You can make fun of the Yeti pubes and the mushroom and all of that stuff. You could do that. He's not interested in that because, again, that would theoretically be punching up at a powerful, wealthy person who is being alleged to have committed all these crimes, someone who could be president once again. You would think that that's what a populist comedian would do. But no, in this case, pure defense. He is Donald Trump's shield, one of many in right-wing media designed to destroy the credibility of someone who had a horrific experience with Donald Trump. That is what right-wing populism is. That is what right-wing comedy is. It's terrible, but that's what it is. And I'll remind you of how Stormy Daniels talked about the experience. She did say that she blacked out when she came out of the bathroom and found him laying on the bed, having removed much of his clothing. Of course, this followed up the earlier instance in which she got to his room for a business dinner and he was in pajamas and she told him to change. So many signals that she was not interested in having a sexual experience with him, but Greg Gutfeld cares as much about the consent that women provide as Donald Trump does. She goes on to say that he blocked the door, saying there was a bodyguard right outside the door. There was an imbalance of power for sure. He was bigger and blocking the way, but I mean, I was not threatened verbally or physically. Again, she is not making a claim that it was rape. That differentiates her from the other women who have claimed and convinced courts that he raped or sexually assaulted them. This also came right afterwards, after she described that he brought up his daughter Ivanka after she spanked him on the butt. Now again, if you were a real comedian, the fact that he's bringing up his daughter, who he has frequently publicly on camera fantasized about having sex with, that might be a thing that you'd make a joke about. But if you saw your job as just protecting the powerful from the consequences of their actions, then you go after Stormy Daniels instead. And that is what Greg Gutfeld continues to do. Take a look at this.
Stormy called it an imbalance of power. Well, duh. That's why you met him. If he were a mechanic, if he was a high school teacher, you wouldn't have run up and slept with him. It was all about the power. It was all about the imbalance. That's how this transaction works when you're a porn star.
I don't think he knows what porn is, okay? She's not a prostitute. She is a porn star. She's a performer in content that you will publicly degrade, while I'm gonna guess Greg Gutfeld has watched what, 5,000 hours of pornography through the course of his life. He probably watched pornography later after doing that little monologue because it's something for him to consume and then to attack, to shame the people who provide the service that he demands on a daily basis and virtually every other conservative does. She is not a prostitute, and I've got news for him too. If she was a prostitute, she still gets to decide who she has sex with. I know that's gonna blow his mind, it's gonna blow the mind of his audience, but the fact that she's a sex worker does not mean that you just get to force yourself on them. And you should have known better. You went to his room. I mean, I know that you went to his room because he was offering a business opportunity, and when you got there and he was dressed in pajamas, you made clear that you weren't interested in a sexual thing. You told him to change. Screw all of that. You're a whore and you don't deserve consideration. That is what Greg Gutfeld is saying. And is this one of his jokes? I mean, again, it just all blends so naturally and it all has the same goal anyway that it's impossible to really say. I also love that he is throwing Donald Trump under the bus there. I mean, not in terms of his conduct, he's excusing the fact that he, like, you know, kind of assaulted this woman, but he's making clear that that's how Donald Trump has sex. There's an imbalance of power. You need his money. Now, arguably, there are other reasons that someone might have sex with someone. They might be, you know, like physically attracted to them in some way. They might actually desire them. Greg Gutfeld does not even consider that as a possibility. Certainly not for Donald Trump. He doesn't even bring it up as a general thing that could drive interest in having sex. That's just so to the side of it. No, you become a billionaire or you host a show on Fox News to get around all of that stuff that other men have to do where, you know, like women actually want to have sex with them. No, you get in a position where you corner them and they feel like they have to do it because either they'll lose out on business opportunities or maybe you'll sue them or maybe you'll send your crowd after them to give them death threats or whatever. I believe that Greg Gutfeld is being completely honest that that is how he views sex. Now, I don't know how exactly you transition from he's a sex god capable of making someone pass out when he throws his bulk on them to, of course, he's just gonna do it. He's a businessman, he can do whatever he wants. But that is the actual right-wing defense of Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels. And by the way, he is also, as we've pointed out with so many of the right-wingers who have commented on this story, Donald Trump formally denies that any of this happened. Does it seem like Greg Gutfeld thinks that Trump is being honest about that? Does it seem like he buys that this didn't happen? No, he totally accepts that it happened because it totally happened. And it doesn't bother Greg Gutfeld that Donald Trump is lying about this event happening any more than it bothers him that he did the horrific things that are alleged here.
The testimony of Stormy Daniels that was salacious, that was the point of it. Listen, there is no person on planet Earth that believes Donald Trump has been celibate all his life. That is not news. But they want to drag him through the gutter because this is a political smear job. It's not about the rule of law. And it's frankly, it's tragic what is happening because the rule of law is important. It protects all of us. This is what banana republics do.
I mean, some banana republics are ruled by, you know, like quasi strongmen who get away with breaking the law openly. Ted Cruz is somewhat accurate in that regard, but I love so many of the things that he said there. Nobody thinks that he's celibate. Yeah, I guess that is, there's only two choices. You're either celibate or you're cheating on your wife 2 months after she gave birth to your child with a pornographic actress. Obviously, those are the two things. You're either one or the other. There are two sorts of people in the world. Which are you, dear viewer? No, if we're horrified by what is alleged to have taken place here, not only in the initial event, but the fact that he's going around paying off people to not reveal what he has done, and then he's lying about it in terms of his business records, which is what the actual charges are about. Our concern there is not that, oh dear God, he's not celibate. That has nothing to do with it. It's the true mark, by the way, and you should always be on the lookout for this when you're watching political content. It's the true mark of an intellectual coward when you are so sure that you are incapable of actually addressing an argument that you retreat, run as fast as you can, and hide behind an invented thing. The idea that we're concerned that he's not being celibate. No, we didn't expect that he would be celibate. You know, we thought that he might potentially have sex with his wife at that point. That's sort of how this generally goes. And you know, it's usually like the right side of the aisle that supposedly values marriage and traditional marriage and all that. And so again, just like we talked about yesterday on the show, Ted Cruz is gonna keep this entire thing at arm's length. This is a smear job, it's salacious, it's supposed to hurt him. No, but Ted Cruz, you're a Republican conservative from Texas, a champion of old school values. Should it hurt him? Should it shame him? Should it humiliate him? I know that he says it didn't happen, but Ted Cruz, just like Greg Gutfeld earlier in the show, does not seem to doubt that it happened. He just doesn't like that it's being talked about. He doesn't think that the MAGA world should know who Donald Trump is. They should not know the wide gulf between the way he talks about things and talks about his marriage and all that and what actually happened. And imagine with any other sex scandal, imagine a Democrat coming out and saying about, you know, Bill Clinton or whatever. We're like a year into the impeachment drive and someone comes out and is like, well, nobody thought that Bill Clinton was celibate. Oh, well, then I'm not concerned anymore. We're good. We're moving on with our life. Because that was my main concern, thinking that he was celibate. This is the best defense they have of Donald Trump. And look, this is the best defense they have on arguably the most minor of all of the charges that he's facing. The business records violations are a real thing. If he violated the law, and it appears that he does, then he should suffer the consequences for that, particularly at a felony level. If he committed those business records violations, that fraud, when it comes to record keeping, in pursuit of covering up another crime, which is not directly being adjudicated in this case, but is being described as these witnesses are coming forward. But this is the best they can do. Because at the end of the day, they just really don't care. They're being dishonest about so much, but they are not being dishonest about the fundamental fact that they don't care that he cheated on Melania. They don't care that he paid the women off to hide it. They don't care that he committed fraud to hide the fact that he paid them off. Because they don't care about any of this stuff. The supposed standards that they think that you should judge politicians by, all of that, it's made up. It's contingent on the person. You know, if we can get, you know, if we can get Bill Clinton, then okay, I guess we probably care about that stuff or whatever. There was the California congresswoman who had like a threesome or something. She literally left office as a result of that. What, people think that she was celibate? Is that a defense now? Al Franken, like, he should have just talked about celibacy, could have avoided a whole lot of trouble. Anthony Weiner should have just talked about celibacy. Again, all of these cases in which there were serious consequences could have been avoided if you just pulled one of the tricks of Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz, who, by the way, fancies himself and has throughout his entire career as a debater, a master of logic, basically like the elected Ben Shapiro. This is the best that he's got. Is that the most embarrassing defense of Donald Trump? I want to end with this from Kellyanne Conway.
You combine the get out the vote program by all the government agencies on the college campuses with the student loan forgiveness. You got a president not paying $130,000 to a porn person. I don't say star because that's an opinion and I don't share it. I have no basis to form it. But you combine that. And you know what, Jesse? Here's what's scary about it.
The woman that he had the affair with and then paid off and then committed fraud, lied about it. She's not even one of the best porn stars. I mean, granted, she's a porn star, but there are more talented porn stars. There are porn stars with bigger social media followings who've received more awards at the AVNs. She's not even a star. Not that I have any basis to decide. Well, who do you think deserves the label? Why are you acting as a critic of who the porn stars actually are? The entire thing is ridiculous. I play that because it makes her look like a clown. And also to show that she jokes about the affair that he had. Jesse Waters laughs about the affair that he had. Just bear that all in mind for the next sex scandal that comes up for a Democrat. They don't actually think any of this matters and they don't care about it at all. And also, she doesn't doubt any aspect of this. She, like so many of the others, they just accept that it happened, which is amazing that they still love this guy. They still worship this guy, but also they don't have a problem with the fact that he has and continues to this day to deny that it happened. He is lying to me about that. He's lying to you about that. He's also lying to them about that, and they don't care. Again, they're being totally honest about not having a problem with literally any of this. And if this was it, then I guess that would be one thing. But the fact that they also don't care about what happened in Georgia, they don't care about the fraud in New York, they don't care about E. Jean Carroll, they don't care about the classified documents, they don't care about the January 6th riot, they don't care about any of this stuff. It seems like they just really don't care what their side gets up to. Fairly inescapable conclusion. Now, with that said, we are going to take the first break of the show, but a lot more to talk about on the other side of this. In reference to a threat I made to the audience, wherein if we do not get 100 gifted memberships on YouTube today, I will do an in-depth analysis of why I think The Last Jedi is arguably the best Star Wars movie. I love Brooke's comment. This is like Brett threatening to eat a sandwich. Like, okay, bro, you just want the sandwich. Do it already. Maybe. But I'm the one holding the thermal detonator, so I'm the one that makes the threats. Anyway, with that said, why don't we jump into more news? And we're gonna see maybe the culmination of a feud that we've been following for feels like 8 years. Let's take a look at this.
The form of the resolution is as follows. Declaring the office of Speaker of the House of Representatives to be vacant. Party for the American people watching.
Yeah, if you disagree with Marjorie Greene, you're the Uniparty. Well, call me John Uniparty Iderola, because I disagree with her too. It was nice to see her booed, okay? And that was basically the final attempt, I hope, I pray, of Marjorie Greene to boot Mike Johnson from his position and to stop with that sideshow and go back to all of the other nonsensical sideshows that she does. That effort failed, as you could probably tell from the booing. It failed really, really, really badly. It did not come close to succeeding. And we're gonna get to how pathetic an attempt to boot him from his position it was. But I wanna focus first on how bad of an overall experience this was for Marjorie Greene and how utterly weak it makes her look. Now, as a side benefit to this, it actually is going to make Donald Trump look weak thanks to his late involvement in the process. We'll get to that, stay tuned for that. But first, this.
Develop and grow our majority by building upon our resources and expanding. He instead led us to another CR on January 18th, 2024. And got it passed with the support of 207 Democrats. And all Democrat members of the committee voted to advance the measure to the floor while removing this uniparty speaker will not give the speaker's gavel to the Democrats, which would only happen if Republicans actually vote for Hakeem Jeffries.
Okay, so that was a lot of fun. Look, she should have prepared herself. She, assuming that she understands that generally before you put something up to a vote, especially something divisive, you like ask around, do a whip count, you could do that sort of thing. She should have known whether it was gonna work or not. And by the way, you don't have to only go forward with it if you think it's going to work. You could use it as an opportunity. She sort of was trying to do that. It just can't have helped her in terms of the PR. And the fact that she was being booed down, not just by Democrats, by the way, as we'll get to, her Republican colleagues were going to town on her, and we're gonna have some amazing quotes on that. You can't just keep being huffy and looking around. Like, you look totally alone, you look totally radical in comparison to the rest of the party. And by the way, like, using this as an opportunity to try to push the idea of the uniparty, no, there are on incredibly substantive matters, effectively a uniparty. But the issue with Marjorie Greene is, like with so much else in politics, she is there to be a distraction from what is really going on. In the same way that the culture war is a distraction from the economic policies that Republicans actually want, and Marjorie Greene is a willing player in that. Yes, she believes every conspiracy she's ever heard on the internet or whatever, but she also knows that it's an effective way to get right wingers to okay their own financial degradation. The uniparty is about the things that get regulated and don't, the things that get funded and don't. And Marjorie Greene is almost never a critic of that. Throwing Mike Johnson out is not a solution to the issue of the uniparty, it's a sideshow. I really don't even care at the end of the day if he remains as speaker. I think that there are potentially some side benefits to having a government that functions, but it's not gonna function particularly well. So I don't even really care, but it's on her to make the case that she's done a terrible job of doing it. Now, others have made the case as to why she's the worst. You have Dan Crenshaw saying she needs her time in the spotlight, you know, and it's been a while. And I think it's one last ditch effort to get attention is what she's looking for. Ted Cruz called her effort to oust Johnson silly. Representative Mike Lawler said that she's clearly gone off the deep end, maybe the result of a space laser. Ouch. Says, but this type of tantrum is absolutely unacceptable, and it does nothing to further the cause of the conservative movement. The only people who have stymied our ability to govern are the very people that have pulled these types of stunts throughout the course of this Congress to undermine the House Republican majority. 100%. And by the way, this is how somebody like Marjorie Greene, I understand that it's repetitive, and maybe at a certain point it gets boring to keep hearing about space lasers or whatever. But when people so willingly rise to prominence, riding conspiracism and anti-Semitic conspiracy theories and advocating for political violence, do not let them live that down. And so if I had to hear about deep space lasers or whatever for the next 50 years, assuming I make it that far, I'm perfectly fine with that. But as I said, it wasn't even close. And so the vote to block the motion to vacate the speakership had 163 Democrats, 196 Republicans, 7 people on the Democratic side voted present, to be fair. And then the noes totaled 43. The noes are actually very interesting because you had Marjorie Greene and her close allies like Gosar and stuff like that. A lot of the other noes, though, interestingly, she's like on the far right insane portion of the Republican Party. It's the most progressive members of the House that allied with them in this case. And so you had a lot of the CPC and AOC and that sort of thing. And I get the argument that they're making. Obviously, they don't want Johnson in office for very different reasons than Marjorie Greene is opposed to it. But in this particular case, it sort of made sense, I guess, for them to be allies. Now, that said, while she looked bad, you know, as it was going on, she was getting booed and all that, I want to just mention two other funny aspects of this entire thing. So now that we know how this thing ended, okay, that she got barely any support from other Republicans, she got more Democratic support than she did Republicans. And by the way, she has often made the case that if you get more support from Democrats and Republicans, that you're a traitor to the right. So I guess she should leave office at this point. This is exactly the problem she had with Mike Johnson. But anyway, this move came after a 2-day stretch of meetings this week with Mike Johnson, in which she tried to negotiate a series of demands in exchange for not calling the ouster vote. Among the demands were cutting off all future US aid to Ukraine, defunding the DOJ, and imposing a 1% across the board cut on all spending bills if lawmakers are unable to negotiate a deal to fund the government in September. Now we knew, we talked about this earlier this week, and it seems like, I don't know, it seems like you're asking for a lot when I don't think this will work. But now in hindsight, she's sitting across the table from Mike Johnson. And Mike Johnson is a religious crazy, he's a wackadoodle, he's a genuinely bad guy. But I am sure that he had talked to his caucus. He knew this thing wasn't gonna work. So he's sitting across the table from her and she's like, well, I want this and I want this and I want this. And he's thinking, you have no hand. You have nothing. Why are you asking me for literally anything? Honestly, if you're Mike Johnson, there's nothing you want more than for her to go through with it because it makes your opposition look pathetic, look ridiculous. And they're not the only ones that look pathetic and ridiculous coming out of this. Donald Trump decided to get a little bit of that magic. So he put out this message, okay? And some of it, it makes sense that he would put this out. He says, I absolutely love Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's got capital S spirit. She's got capital F fight. And I believe she'll be around and on our side for a long time to come. I fear that as well. However, right now, Republicans have to be fighting the radical left Democrats and all the capital D damage they have done to our country. Stop capitalizing words. I'm not even doing it anymore. It's just too many. With a majority of one, shortly growing to 3 or 4, we're not in a position of voting on a motion to vacate. At some point, we may very well be, as a warning to Mike Johnson, by the way. Blah, 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 but this is not the time. So he says, don't show disunity. Mike Johnson's a good man who's trying very hard. I also wish certain things were done in the last period of 2 months, but we will get them done soon together.
It is my request that Republicans vote for the motion to table in all caps. We will win big and it will be soon.
And that theoretically could be a bold move. He is taking a side on this. Now, he's arguably taking the safer side, keeping Mike Johnson around. And he's sort of like, look, he says, I love Marjorie Greene, but this is also the thing she cares about most in the world. And he's telling her to F off with it, that it's a disastrous thing that could cost them the House. But it's not a bold move even to that extent, because he sent that truth after the vote had already happened. You pathetic little baby. If you're gonna take a side, at least take a side before the thing is done. He already knew that that side had won. Now look, it was almost guaranteed that it would. But imagine if he had called for, you know, like for them to keep Mike Johnson, and then Marjorie Greene had miraculously gotten more support than she ended up doing. It would have been a bold stance. She would have rebelled against him. But none of that was true. So one of two things is the case. Either he is so scared of seeming out of step with the right that he waited until he saw the result to post that, or he has no idea what's going on or when. And he just opined, having paid no attention whatsoever to the process that was going forward. This was being live streamed, like the news was covering it, C-SPAN was covering it. You could know in real time what's happening. So either ignorance or cowardice, it's one of those two things. And so coming out of this, he doesn't look great, but Marjorie Greene looks terrible, okay? And I know that there wasn't really that far for her to drop, but to whatever extent she was hoping to move on from this to either her next feud or her next priority or whatever, I can't imagine this is gonna help her.
What is Joe Biden's response to withhold weapons in a war that Israel cannot afford to lose? What did we do after we were attacked in Pearl Harbor? What did we do to end the war against the Japanese? We dropped two nuclear weapons on two Japanese cities to make sure our soldiers didn't have to invade Japan where you could have a million lives lost. What is Joe Biden doing? He's making it impossible for allies throughout the world to trust us. He's making it hard on Israel to win.
So why the hell is Senator Lindsey Graham talking about nuking Japan? Well, he's using it, if it's not clear there, to justify further loss of innocent civilian life in Gaza. That's what it's about. He is responding to the news, the fairly shocking news, admittedly, that Joe Biden is putting in at least temporary pause on weapons, particularly bomb shipments to Israel, as a way of exercising some amount of influence to stop Israel's invasion of Rafah, which is already proceeding, by the way. Aerial bombardments have already been going on for more than a day, and the ground invasion is underway as well. That invasion is predicted to be, and it makes total sense why, absolutely devastating when it comes to loss of civilian life. You have a massive quantity of people jammed into a very small area. The vast majority of them civilians. And so if you begin randomly bombing buildings, you're gonna have a higher percentage of civilian loss of life than you have in all of the other aerial bombardments that we've already seen that have been devastating, that have lost well over 30,000 people their lives. Now, obviously, Graham doesn't care about that. I mean, he doesn't even seem to be bothered by the many civilians that were killed by the nukes dropped in Japan. So civilian life clearly is not his biggest priority. But he really likes this point. He thinks it is a very powerful rhetorical point, which is why he's apparently bringing it up repeatedly. Take a look at this.
Would you have supported dropping the atomic bombs on Hiroshima or Nagasaki, General Brown, to end World War II?
Well, Senator, I think it is based on the situation where the...
Well, we know. I mean, it's happened. We know. I'm not asking. They did it. Do you think that was disproportionate?
It was definitely.
Do you, in hindsight, do you think that was the right decision for America to drop two atomic bombs on the Japanese cities in question?
Well, I'll tell you, it stopped the World War.
Do you agree, General Austin? If you'd been around, would you say drop them?
I agree with the chairman here.
If we go back in time, says, hey, we got two atomic bombs, should we drop them? What would you say?
I think the leadership was interested in curtailing the...
Well, what's Israel interested in? Do you believe Iran really wants to kill all the Jews if they could? Iranian regime? Yeah. Do you believe Hamas is serious when they say we'll keep doing it over and over again? Do you agree that they will if they can?
I do, Hamas.
Okay, though, right. Do you believe that Hezbollah is a terrorist organization also bent on the destruction of the Jewish state?
Hezbollah is a terrorist organization.
Okay, so Israel's been hit in the last few weeks by Iran, Hezbollah, and Hamas, dedicated to their destruction. And you're telling me you're going to tell them how to fight the war and what they can and can't use when everybody around them wants to kill all the Jews? And you're telling me that if we withhold weapons in this fight, the existential fight for the life of the Jewish state, it won't send the wrong signal?
Yeah, I don't know if Lloyd Austin is telling him that, but I'll tell him that. Yes, in both cases. One, we can influence some influence on the way they prosecute the war, largely because we're giving them the weapons to do that. We're giving them the weapons in addition to billions upon billions and billions of dollars to do that. Lindsey Graham, do you think that we're a sovereign state? Do you think that we should wield influence in the world, or should we just fund other governments to do whatever they want? Okay, do we just give things away, or do we exercise actual power? Lindsey Graham clearly in this case does not want us to exercise power, okay? He wants us to just let them do whatever they want, so long as they're facing enemies. If they're facing enemies at any point, then you don't dare tell them that there are any limits. So if they wanna go in and just murder every civilian, fill mass graves, don't say that you have a problem with that, because they're facing an existential threat. So they can do whatever they want. That is what Lindsey Graham, in multiple appearances, both on the floor of the Senate, right there, or in the hearing for the Senate, and on Fox News, is doing. Okay. By the way, are you seriously making the case that this is an existential threat? October 7th was absolutely devastating. Okay. And since then, Israel has killed more than 30 times as many people. If you believe that Hamas can wipe out Israel, you are insane. And you should not be holding any elected office in our Senate. That's a mad thing to say. Okay. And what's the point of all of this, of repeatedly invoking the nuking of Japan? Well, clearly he wants to make the rhetorical case, albeit vaguely. He doesn't want to be specific about this because he will look like a clown if he does, that if you're facing an enemy, any disproportionate use of force up to and including nuking them is acceptable. I mean, if you're making the comparison that the threat that Israel faces from whatever is left of Hamas in whatever is left of Gaza is the same threat that America faced in World War II against Japan, well, then clearly you think that that sort of response is justified. And you can do whatever you want. As long as you claim it's necessary to win the war, you can do whatever you want. And look, by the way, and I will give him a little bit of credit, that in addition to him thinking that the weapons should go to Israel, he also at least is consistent in wanting us to help arm Ukraine. But Russia is saying that they're facing an existential threat from NATO and from the possibility that Ukraine could join NATO. So I guess all of the war crimes they're committing in Ukraine are perfectly justified. It's an existential threat. Are you gonna tell them how they can prosecute the war? Yes, I think reasonable people are going to expect certain standards, even in the context of a war, regardless of who it is. That is what we're going to do, particularly if we're funding the goddamn thing. I think that we can do that. Okay, and here's the thing. Every combatant says they have to win the war they're in. No one has ever been like, okay, we're involved in this war, and it'd be nice if we won. You know, who cares, right? We'll give it a try. And if we don't win, it's fine. It's always presented as an existential thing. And Graham is now laying the groundwork for that to be all you need to do. And then you can do whatever you want. Use chemical weapons, drop a nuke if you want to, wipe out civilians, use rape as a weapon of war. Are you gonna tell them how they're supposed to prosecute the war? I think that we should. Senator Graham clearly doesn't think that we should. And by the way, he is using this to justify the bombardment of Rafah, because undoubtedly there are members of Hamas that are hiding amongst the densely populated civilian areas. Okay. So we have to kill Hamas so we can kill a bunch of the civilians because they pose an existential threat. They don't believe that Israel is legitimate, so all of this is perfectly fine. Okay, here in the US, I don't know if Senator Lindsey Graham is interested in what's happening in the US. There are militias that want to overthrow the US government. They don't believe in our way of life. They don't believe in our system of government. They don't believe in democracy. They don't believe in the separation of church and state. They believe that if they can, and there have been terror attacks to this end in America, obviously Oklahoma City and others, that they will wipe us out if they can. And they are hiding, by the way, in civilian areas, in cities, I don't know, in Indiana, Tennessee, Ohio, they're there. Should we nuke those places? I mean, they pose an existential threat. They literally think that our government is illegitimate and should be wiped out. Okay, I'm not saying that we should nuke those places, but Lindsey Graham is laying the rhetorical foundation for exactly that. And by the way, he didn't just mention Hamas, you noticed. He said Hamas, and he mentioned Hezbollah, and he mentioned Iran as well. And he said they were hit by all of those places. Of course, he left out that it was a counterattack for Israel striking Iranian territory inside of Syria. He leaves that out, again, cowardice. But okay, if you believe that Hezbollah and Iran pose an existential threat in the same way that Hamas does, are we nuking Lebanon? Are we nuking Iran? Now, I'm not the one escalating this to talking about nukes. Lindsey Graham is the one escalating this to talking about nukes. Is he pre-justifying the nuclear bombardment of Tehran because Israel faces an existential threat? If not, why is he still talking about nukes, okay? And the sickest thing about all of this is there is one group that is facing an existential threat, one place that is facing an existential threat. And that's the Palestinians living in Gaza. Okay, not some hypothetical thing where like you suffered a horrendous terror attack and potentially could suffer more. And it's not the first time that Israel has suffered a terror attack. It's a terrible thing. Every single one that has happened has been absolutely terrible. Nobody actually believes that Israel can be wiped out. Hamas, that's crazy talk to say. But Gaza has been utterly devastated. Do you know that about 2% of the population of the Gaza Strip has been killed? Twice as much has been injured. It's like 1 in 25 people have been directly injured thanks to the war that's already been prosecuted. Can you imagine mapping out those numbers over Israel? If there's a conflict, it would be utterly unacceptable to everyone in the world. That's already happened, by the way. Virtually the entire population of Gaza has already been displaced. And why wouldn't they? More than half of all of the buildings in Gaza are destroyed. 360,000 were partially damaged or destroyed in total. 32 hospitals, virtually every hospital that exists in Gaza has been rendered non-operational. Other critical infrastructure in terms of medicine and water and power also destroyed. 3 churches and nearly 300 mosques have been destroyed. By the way, every single university has suffered tremendous damage, leaving the future of the education system in Gaza totally up in the air. So who exactly is suffering the existential threat? A measurable percentage of the entire population has already been killed. Almost the majority of the buildings are damaged and might not be able to be rebuilt. And meanwhile, aid is not being allowed to get in. There are those who are suffering an existential threat. Okay, Lindsey Graham doesn't care about them. He cares about justifying an attack in Rafah that could result in tens of thousands of civilians being killed. That's what he does. And by the way, I understand why he's so fired up. He understands that the political winds have turned against him. A recent poll showed that not only 56% of Democratic voters believe that Israel is not just committing horrendous acts, but an actual genocide. 56% now say that it's a genocide. Nearly 40% of all voters believe that they're committing a genocide. And 7 out of 10 support a permanent ceasefire. He has already lost the rhetorical war. That's why he has now retreated to making comparisons to World War II. I don't think it's gonna work for him. Best of luck. We're gonna take a short break. We'll be back after this. Okay, more comments that I wanna get to, but we have very little time. Let's just jump directly into this. Lauren Boebert is absolutely furious over a new initiative that allows Colorado residents, obviously her state, to call a hotline to sign up and volunteer to host a migrant family. Basically taking a migrant family that might be staying in some sort of communal housing and offer up a spare room in their house for them. And she hates this. Now, for someone who declares herself to be a Christian, that's an interesting take, and we'll certainly get to that. But first, here is what she posted. Denver has now opened a hotline for residents to call and offer up their own homes to illegals. If you have extra space, you're encouraged to host a migrant for some time. Is she doubting that they're migrants? They're literally migrants. This is the most asinine and ridiculous thing I've ever heard. What are you talking about? I know that you've spoken with Marjorie Greene. Anyway, we need to close the damn border and have some semblance of a sovereign nation again. The entire world sees this stuff and thinks we're a joke of a nation, and we're really beginning to look like one. Yeah, I can just imagine in like the halls of government in Switzerland and Madagascar, they're like, did you hear people in Colorado are hosting migrants? The age of America is over. What are you talking about? It's utterly ridiculous. By the way, it's a great demonstration that you know, like they say, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's and give unto God what is God's, that there are these like different worlds or whatever. Yeah, there are also different things that as a politician you can focus on. There's like hardcore real politic. We care about our stance in the world. We care about our resources. And then theoretically, there's your Christian values. Now, Lauren Boebert is an elected official, but she also pretends to be a Christian. You know, Christians who are charitable and all that. Which is she choosing out of those two? You know, I'm an atheist, but I think that charity is a good thing. She seems to hate it more than the godless guy here. But anyway, the program that she's referring to is Hope Has No Borders. It has paired at least 500 migrants with host families in Colorado since late 2023. As of May 1st, anyone who wants to sign up can call Mile High United Way's Help Center by dialing 211 to sign up. The Help Center will then pass along the information to Hope Has No Borders to match hosts with migrant families. It seems like a great organization and a great thing that they're doing. Erin Lennon is one individual who first began hosting an immigrant family in her home last year. She talked to Denver TV station KMGH and said that she felt compelled to help those who are new to her city. And just to be clear to Lauren Boebert, not compelled by the force of government, compelled by the values that she holds. That's a thing that can drive people's behavior. Anyway, she said they're extremely hard workers. They want to succeed. They want to have a chance, which is objectively true for the vast, vast majority and is true of every wave of migrants that has ever come into America. They just want to be a part of what we're doing and thereby contribute to our country. That's all it is. And for Lauren Boebert, no, you are wrong to be charitable. You're going to act like what? A good Samaritan? Screw you. And by the way, I am old enough to remember, okay, when their reaction to leftists or liberals or Democrats saying, hey, maybe we don't devastate the migrants, maybe we don't sick alligators on them, they were like, yeah, well, why don't you let one of them stay in your house? And then when you do, they attack you for it. Like, this is an amazing charitable thing. I don't know that I would be comfortable with having any random family in my house. I'm not even talking about migrants. I'm literally like, I'm not comfortable unless I'm the only person in my house and I have a family. So it's so charitable to open up your house to a family and help give them a start, okay? And launch them onto a path of being a contributing part of our society. And it's just so rich to see someone who loves to claim to be driven by Christian values mocking people, attacking people, asserting that they're in some way being traitorous because they feel the urge to be charitable in a way that Lauren Boebert apparently cannot. Anyway, we're going to move on to our last story of this first hour. Whenever we're ready, let's jump into this. GOP Representative Mike Collins is now facing criticism from both sides of the aisle over a gross joke that he told about RFK Jr. Now, the background for this joke is that it was recently reported that RFK Jr. in like court documents from a decade ago had said that a worm got into his brain and ate a portion of it. And look, if you read that and you want to make a joke about that, I understand the inclination to do that. It's a funny thing, okay? That said, there are jokes and there are jokes. And here is the joke that Representative Mike Collins made. You either die a Kennedy with a hole in the brain or live long enough to become a Kennedy with a hole in the brain. He get it? Because they killed JFK. Ha 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 ha. What is the purpose of this? What are we doing here? Like, okay, you don't like RFK Jr. You don't want to be president. I get that. I'm sympathetic to that view. I'm not going to be supporting him for president. And look, if you think that it's weird that he talked about getting a worm in his brain, I get it. It's a weird thing, okay? It's certainly noteworthy, it's newsworthy, it's a little bit funny. But do you have to joke about the assassination of a president? Like, are you guys not satisfied with telling jokes about Paul Pelosi's skull getting cracked open with a hammer? Like, you're like, oh, I'm getting bored with that. I need to talk about other victims of political violence. No, you actually don't need to do that. It's not actually necessary. And he has suffered some criticism for it. By the way, it's 1 month before the 56th anniversary of the assassination. Not only, well, JFK had died, but then also Senator Robert F. Kennedy had, of course, been assassinated as well. So Jenna Ellis says, no, just no. Yes, he crossed a line for Jenna Ellis. Robert Salvador says, yeah, you should probably delete this one. You're an elected official and it's a disgusting comment. But that said, he was not just criticized by like members of the Kennedy family or other right wingers. He did receive some support. So Autism Capital tweeted, Jesus, this banger is too hot even for X. Thank God Elon took over. To which Representative Mike Collins says, bless the Elon. And look, I find that tweet to be more offensive than the joke about the assassination. A full grown man tweeting, bless the Elon. I would go on at length about how much this reveals about Representative Mike Collins and who he is. But we don't have time because the show is almost over. The first hour is almost over. So I'm just going to shorthand it in language that his side of the aisle has popularized. You cuck. Jesus. Bless the Elon. And that message from Autism Capital, this banger is too hot even for X. If you had any lingering hope that Twitter was a place that you should spend your time, I want you to print out that tweet and just look at it for a while. Anyway, by the way, if the name Representative Mike Collins rung a bell, it's because he was, of course, the guy that we talked about recently who tweeted this, Ole Miss taking care of business. So in addition to joking about assassinations of presidents, he was the guy that liked the man who was taunting a black woman doing a monkey dance and making a monkey face. Look, it feels weird. It feels old timey. I don't want to seem old timey to be like, hey, we should be better than this. But like, they're the ones that keep saying we should be better than this. It should be the 1950s again. I don't think people were tweeting stuff like this in the 1950s. Anyway, with that said, that's all the time we have for the first hour. Thank you, everyone. More to come in the aftermath, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.